For those of you who have been coming here following these teachings, for anyone who has been on some kind of spiritual journey, by spiritual, I don't mean something special. I mean anyone who has seen adequate suffering in life, which is most likely all of us, and is on an automatic quest to find out what is life about. When this has begun, one is now reset. The compass is reset. Instead of pointing outwards, the focus is within. When the realization dawns that my life, what has transpired in my life, all the ups and downs, highs and lows, since I can remember, being buffeted between the banks of pleasure and pain, my life has shown to me that my peace cannot be found in the flow of life because I don't know what will happen tomorrow. I never did. True peace can only be found within. That peace which does not depend on what I see, hear, taste, smell, and touch. That is the spiritual quest. And the automatic reset that happens is a preference for silence, a preference. And by silence, one aspect is physical silence. This does not only mean that. Silence refers to silence of the mind, the thinking mind. When one has seen that one's mind is so fickle, changes moment to moment, something which troubled me 6 months ago no longer troubles me now. When this nature of the mind is seen that it is the troublemaker, at that point there's a recognition of silence. Because who knows that the mind is troubling me? There is some awareness that knows my mind is troubling me. And when I taste this silence, which is the silence of the thinking mind, it is so alluring because I feel at home. I feel at peace. When I engage in conflict with someone, I really wonder, is this really worth it? My conflicts are based on my perspectives, my conditioning, which I assume is the truth. The other person is equally entitled to their perspective, their conditioning. So when I live my life like this, that neither my version is the truth, nor the other, a deep silence descends. I lose the need to engage in drama. Now, this silence is a quality of the self with the big S, the self with the small S, which is the me, the ego, cannot bear silence. The ego is noise and derives its sense of self from noise because a silent ego is a dead ego. The ego in deep sleep, where is it? So by and by day, the preference becomes one for equanimity, peace, quiet, facing the challenges life brings to the best of one's ability, knowing that God's will prevails all the time. It is as simple as that. Sometimes the silence is so deep that you may hear yourself talking to someone and you really suddenly feel, what the hell am I speaking about? Is it really that important? Even that happens. And more importantly, I start meeting people in silence. That is one of the greatest gifts we can give the person in front of us. Mostly when we meet someone, we are only half present. Our mind is thinking about more important things. What I have to do, where do I have to go, my troubles, my worries. I'm only half present. Is that fair? If God came in front of you, would you be only half present? Similarly, wouldn't you like if you came before someone, that person was fully present to you? Would not one say these are common courtesies? So, to meet people with a noisy mind, to meet people with a quiet mind. So silence is a great pointer. Silence outside, stillness inside. I mean, you can imagine the next argument with someone you normally argue with. Just picture that is going to happen. Wouldn't you agree that before the argument, since you're not aware of the argument yet, there's silence? And after the argument, there's silence. So wouldn't you say the bedrock of the argument is silence? It emerges from silence and dissolves into silence. But because that argument becomes so important to me, this is me, this is my view, this is my opinion, this is my story, how dare you have a view different from mine? I am right, you are wrong. This me, which has separated itself into a story and drama, trying to prove itself right, is the me which is afraid to die into silence. The enlightened being would still express themselves if they felt the need, but they would have no interest in trying to force their view down the other person's throat. They would say what they have to say and leave the results to God. When that happens, once again, the mind is silent. So the mind leaves that place less and less, which is its natural state. It is a rediscovery of this natural way of being and living. Yes, Anubhav, good to see you. Which retreat had you come for, Dharamshala? This year or the last year? You've been in the US, right? Anything you'd like to share since that retreat?
Yeah, so a lot happened after the retreat. So I had that experience. If you remember, I wrote that note to you, and it stayed for week, 10 days. It was very strong, the witnessing, and then it, you know, I fell ill, had some cough and cold, and then that witnessing kind of, you know, if it was 100, it came down to 1 or 2 or something. But after that, I have experienced more and more of peace, and you know, as you and Ramesh talk about the arising of involvement and the cutting of the involvement. So I sometimes feel that it happens like in fraction of seconds, and sometimes 2-3 seconds, and you know, sometimes even mind make fantasies, and it, you know, immediately cuts off. I have that mantra, if you remember, Hari Karta, and it just cuts off, and so I experience more peace. But I don't know what deliverance is really. Sometimes I feel it has happened, and sometimes I feel like it really does not matter. So, I mean, if it's an event that has to happen, I don't see it like as an event happening, but I do feel peace. Even if the body is in pain, like I was all jet lagged and, you know, getting up early and things like that. But still that thing is there, that you see the pain and, you know, you witness it and all that. So, but it really does not matter.
It's very simple. Deliverance is awakening functioning in daily living. Awakening is in the moment.
Yeah.
Getting the driver's license. So first you study how the mechanics of the car is, what do you press, this, that. A new way of engaging with the world. And then you have to go for your driving test. And you pass the test and you're given a license. Does it mean you can drive through heavy traffic? No. It means you know how to drive, but you're a new driver. It's a new way of functioning on the road, which you didn't know earlier. You didn't know driving earlier. So you have awakened to a new way of navigating the road of life. Now, by and by, through practice, through application, you start driving, And after 1 or 2 years, you drive down a particular road which you knew would have stressed you out a lot 2 years ago. You would have shuddered at the thought of driving down that road because of the heavy traffic. And you feel that, my God, now I could manage that. I could manage it without losing my mental balance, without losing my equanimity, is deliverance.
Yeah. So it's not like an event. It's like self.
Yes, it is not an event.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I'm happy. So, but very good. Happy to be here, you know, and your presence is always, it brings me a lot of peace. So.
Nice to see you again. Seema, it's nice to see you. Is your recovery going well?
Yes.
You just had to rest in bed?
Though I didn't rest.
Oh, you didn't?
As I should have.
Yeah.
When you say that you're talking to someone and mind is going here and there, that means you have to be present in now 100% of the time. And that is the practice one has to do, to be present in...
That is one way, but this teaching is not that way. What this teaching does is, it is already removing the garbage from your thinking mind. Because it's showing you the concept of non-doership, taking away hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, shame. So all that is going, right? Because you have been immersed in the teaching. So now this person does not have to do anything to be in the present. It becomes one's natural state.
So eventually it becomes your natural state.
Yes. And it is rediscovered.
Right. Okay.
That natural, like I keep saying, the child is unconditioned being. The child is not going to judge two individuals. It doesn't know what judgment is. That unconditioned being became conditioned with preferences, likes, and preconceived notions. Like its parents said, this kind of person is not good, this kind of person, and all that conditioning got hardwired. When all this is revealed, the natural state is to be present. One does not have to do anything to be present.
Which is in you always.
Yes.
Which is with you always.
It is. It is the essence of your being. Any event that has happened in your life, you would agree with me that you have to be there first. In school, when the roll was being called out and we had to say present, present, first we have to be there to say present. That is the conscious being. That state, if one could call it a state, is rediscovered. It's the natural state. Other techniques are there and tools are there. Mindfulness in Buddhism, how to quieten the mind, mantra japa. Whatever works, whatever one is drawn to, whatever resonates naturally, one follows that. But better it happens naturally, because then even that becomes a frustrating exercise. I am trying my hardest best to be in the present. I can't be in the present. The ego again starts churning. It's very simple. Can you decide when to go to sleep? You can't. You slip into sleep. Yes, you can decide I'm going to lie down and put my head on the pillow. Was deep sleep in your control? Imagine trying to go into deep sleep. It will take you further away from deep sleep. So what this teaching is doing is unburdening the mind bit by bit, relationship by relationship, event by event. This lens of separation, parent, sibling, child, friend, colleague, stranger. Now all relationships are seen as my relationship with God. Why? God created everyone. So if I can see the hand of God behind everyone, my relationship is with God now. Especially the people I don't like. Can I have the courage to see that? So that becomes a way of being. And one naturally discovers one has been delivered, as we were talking about. When you realize, my God, this person would have really upset me 6 months ago, and now it's okay. It's just like a tiny blip. I've not lost my peace. Then you know I'm home. And we are human beings. We don't have to be home all the time. We are allowed to slip up. So we can't be too hard on ourselves. All right, you tried. You failed in one particular instance. Welcome to the human experience. So you don't...
So you have to be aware of it, right?
Yes. That is the only thing required.
Because
unconscious living, conscious living. Just that awareness is enough. That's quite right. And our own patterns, our own views, they all start getting revealed in the light of awareness. Earlier we were so identified that we were not even aware of our dialogue. Now we are aware. It is the journey of awareness. The light shineth in the darkness is the light of awareness, darkness of the ego. The awareness is always there. Only we are becoming more and more attuned to it. Whereas earlier we were lost in the Maya, so to speak. This earlier the veil of the illusion was so thick. Now it starts dissolving.
So I got some insight is that on this journey, as you become more and more aware, so it becomes easier for you to surrender to the things more and more. As you accept things and everything. So I was just practicing certain things and I became aware that though I may try, I may fail at it, but as I surrender more and more to the light, let the light come in and let it do the transformation. So the ultimate ego is that I am doing something that over a period of time, the mindness goes and the divine power from above comes and works on you. That's the state which was very difficult to understand. But now as I practice more and more, I get into it. Like, let the you be open to it and let it work on you.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
What is your name?
Rupal Panchal.
First time?
I have come first time, but I used to listen to your talks and Ramesh talks and Rohit's talks and all this. And my daughter practices Santoshji's books, reads everything.
You know, you mentioned Rohit. He used to tell me when we were much younger that his only prayer was, today I promise myself I will get out of my own way.
Yeah. So he has been inspiration to me, like, So my whole introduction to Mother and Sri Aurobindo happened through Rohit. I've been to Aurobili and I have been kind, the Mother's grace that I have contacts with Alokda and Shraddhaluji,
right,
who guides me very much.
Both of them.
Yeah, so I whenever I visit Aurobili, I go and meet Shraddhaluji every time. It's like a bond with him.
These are the bonds.
Yeah.
Spiritual bonds are the bonds to cherish.
And when I started reading, and I was reading them, in everyone I read, like, I have met them, I have deep bonds with them, and luckily, like, the grace that I have been to their seminars, they've been taking interest in my life, whatever. So it's like something like you have been chosen. Like, it's not something which you can make it happen. You can just align yourself to it.
Yes. Well said. It would really help if we can align to it. I mean, it is such a fortunate happening that grace draws us through our suffering onto the path. But we are really thankful for that.
Yes.
We are really thankful for that.
I feel on this journey in myself, I've realized that over a period of time, the texture of your mind changes and you become aware what the same situation as you were saying, how I would have faced a few months ago or a few years ago, and the same situation now I'm able to accept it, deal with it, and leave it.
Yes, it does change the texture of the mind. Do you know that people who are sensitive to energy, like those who are on the path of, let's say, Kundalini Yoga, have actually witnessed the grooves of the brain being erased and re-inscribed. Now, normal people will say they are mad. Normal people, what we call normal, will say this is madness. One of my mother's experiences was this in her meditation. She actually saw it happening. Now, in a simple way, what does it mean? Any wisdom teaching which is giving you a fresh way to look at things is rewiring your brain, your mind, and therefore the texture is changing. It is becoming more and more sublime. Imagine a very rough jute knitted cloth rubbing inside your mind, and by it becomes soft silk. That grating, that friction is reducing. So it is quite right, the texture is changing to such a degree that I find I am now so much at peace that people are being drawn to it. Now I'm just being myself, not trying to impress others, not trying to be someone I'm not, just doing my own thing. And some different people are coming into my presence. These things start happening because the mind is a vibration. Like attracts like. That is why it is quite right when they say you go with a very disturbed mind, you will attract a problem or an incident. And then you are so lost that you blame that. Like attracts like. Peace attracts peace. Can we switch off one air conditioner? I'm feeling a bit cold. Just for some. Is everyone okay with switching off one?
Yes.
When you feel this journey within, there's a risk or a concern in the mind that your progress in your outer world, do you start becoming complacent or you feel that you're in a very responsible position or a position that really impacts a lot of activity, that this internal journey now is going to be a barrier to your external progress because you might stop worrying about other things and it may take you away from that endeavor, and the peace and the inward journey is so rewarding that you stop bothering on that other end. There's always that conflict.
It could be if that is one's innate nature, but at the same time, it could enhance my efficiency 100-fold if I am engaged completely in the working mind and I am in a profession where I have to give it my all. Imagine if my attention is so focused on the job that my thinking mind is not playing out its usual antics. So can you imagine, like a surgeon, for example, is gifted with the dissolving of the thinking mind. He may not feel that, oh, this means I'm going to become complacent. He may now perform surgeries far better than he ever used to, depending on his innate nature. So if someone is in business and is living an enlightened way of living, the focus on the inconsequentials which used to be there earlier may be dissolved, and at the task at hand the full light shines. So it depends on each person's destiny, innate nature, but most certainly it is not a demotivating factor. Yes, at the same time I will draw my limits. Supposing I'm very ambitious, I may ask myself, where does this stop? And then earlier, where I had no thought of asking this question, now I ask it. And I set my goals, set my plans, and work accordingly. So recalibrations will happen, that is for sure. And decisions may be taken which may not have been taken earlier. For example, I have to go to court. Now I ask myself, do I really want to? Is it really necessary, or am I just getting back at the person? These kind of questions, which were not asked earlier through the light of awareness, I review and I decide that no, I value my peace more and I really don't need to go to court on this except for some ego gratification. Then I take a decision. If I feel yes, I have to because my future depends on it, I do so without the burden of hatred and malice. Because I know now, as Krishna said, nobody is the doer of their actions. So when I go to court, I am fulfilling destiny the way it is meant to be fulfilled, but I'm not carrying with me the hatred and malice towards the other, which my thinking mind would have been consumed with. I am going in an objective way. I have a situation to deal with. I will do my best. The verdict is not in my control. These things start happening. That is the gift of the teaching. So it is truly a game changer.
So a follow-up to that is that, then is it possible that you continue on this journey, but then be fully committed at that work and at the cost of, because there's so much more to learn in the internal identification, both with reading, attending lectures such as this, but at the same time.
You see, now for me, luckily, I had a householder guru, and he was the bank manager of the Bank of India. He loved engagement because he said the test of the teaching is in engaging with all kinds of relationships. Because if you go to an ashram and sit there for 1 year with yourself, you may come out dysfunctional. This was about functioning in the world, being part of the world, finding your peace through relationships, not avoiding them. So the perspective is very important. So all that happened for me happened not by sitting in an ashram, but in engaging. I found my peace through that. And he was always looking forward. I would only go on Sundays because I was working the rest of the days. Whenever I would go earlier and go into his room. And his first question would be, tell me what happened last week at work. Because he wanted to know the situations that came. How did I deal with them? So that became the ground for me as far as absorbing the teachings is concerned.
I'd like to know, I am aware of my thoughts, and then some thoughts are not, negative kind of ones. And I become aware then and there that this is my thinking mind, which is trying to divert me in some way. But of late, I have been quite disturbed. And I have this feeling within me, when you give an exam, you feel a churning or fluttering in the... So of late, I've been feeling that. And I know it's the thinking mind which is trying to push me into another direction. So I'd like to know, how do I get rid of this, this kind of feeling?
Surrender the feeling as well. Why do you want to get rid of it? Why do you want to get rid of it? Because you feel I will be at peace without it. Correct?
Yes.
Now, will you be at peace without it? Or without this person who wants to be at peace without it? Who is the troublemaker?
I want to be a person without having this feeling.
Yes, but that person has to vacate the situation. Because that person is the troublemaker. Because that person doesn't want a certain trouble. This is not a trick. When we are disturbed, we don't want the disturbance. That is very clear, right? But that one who is disturbed is the disturbance, not the disturbance. In deep sleep, there's no disturbance because there is no one to get disturbed. So even when this feeling arises that I'd rather not have it, but it is there, I can't do anything about it, I surrender that to God, to the source, to consciousness. I can't do it. You please help me. So this trying to get rid of it is the problem. That feeling when it arises of trying to get rid of it has to be surrendered. That feeling itself has to be surrendered, and that is how it is gotten rid of. That sheer helplessness that I really want to get rid of this has to be offered at the feet of the Lord. I can't do it. I've tried. Now you do it. At the same time, it is a very earnest pointer, because it has shown to me where my peace lies and where it doesn't lie. So, and earnestness is a very important factor, because some people are so identified and lost in the drama that even this thought will not arise that I want to get rid of it. I don't want to get rid of it because it's my identity. Many people don't want to get rid of things. So that itself is a very big step. But this to acknowledge, no matter how much I try, certain things I can't get rid of. That has to be offered. You may say offered it to the divine, to the source, to a higher power. And let it take care when it is meant to. And more importantly, when these situations arise, it is an opportunity to be thankful for the times it had not arisen. We don't do that. We are so consumed that we forget, what about all those other instances when I was fine? But the ego is so focused on the problem and the trouble that it forgets, out of 10 days, 8 days were quite okay. Why not be grateful and thankful to God for that? Why focus on only that one day or 2 days? It can be quite discomforting when one has that churn inside, like exams, scary. I had a friend, I've mentioned about him. He was a brain, and where I would study for 1 month, he was enjoying life, and 3 days before the exam, he'd open the books and he would go, get straight in his late 80s. That time I realized life isn't fair. It was just absurd. He even took me to these, when we were young, some music concerts in Delhi and all, just 1 month, and I was so shaken up. But he was cool, you know. And as Vimlananda said, the Gauri Vimlananda, actually, exams is pointless. Announcing them 3 months in advance so people can prepare. In life, life is a surprise test. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And how you react to what happens tomorrow determines where you are. So he has said, forget exams. It should be surprise tests all the time. Then you know where you stand. That is the gift of a spiritual teaching. Life will throw a surprise at you and you will know, am I standing in quicksand like I used to? Or am I standing on a large, solid rock? And what is that rock? A total acceptance of the will of God. A total acceptance of the situation in front of me, whether I like it or not. A total acceptance that nobody is the doer of their actions, no matter how it appears to me. Which leads to me facing the pain which has been allotted to me in this lifetime, but with peace and equanimity.
I just want to share something on what she said. So I just, you know, when I used to I read the Bhagavad Gita and pray, and you know, I was in those divine moments with God, suddenly I used to have this burst of negative thoughts, sometimes abusive. And that is when this teaching really helped me, that even those thoughts are, you know, from Krishna and from God, and it shakes you up. And the more you learn to like be with it, it just disappears. And you know, it's like a cleaning of the mind.
So, sure. To know that even the negative thoughts are not mine.
Yes.
Na aham karta hari karta. So that is the magic of this teaching.
And you see, so much comes up. Yes. So much garbage is in the unconscious, subconscious, that when we are on this journey, we'll be surprised with what all data is stored inside us, which starts coming up to reveal itself. That happens. Really surprised that I could think this thought. So to take ownership of that garbage, garbage is garbage, but we say it is my garbage. Garbage has got created by lifetimes of unconscious living and thinking, which I didn't do. I did not create the ego, God did. The ego got created through the process of divine hypnosis, where from a baby, I suddenly started feeling I'm separate from others. Who created that? God did. So if God created the troublemaker, let God deal with the troublemaker. All God wants is for me to allow him or her to do their job. So this whole endeavor to kill the ego, my guru was very against it. You didn't create the ego, then where's the question of you killing it? The thinking mind, which is the ego with its sense of doership, let's talk about the annihilation of that. It's like the example Joel Goldsmith gave of a woman whose husband was alcoholic, and she went to consult him and went on and on about all the problems, how he behaves, what he does, and this and that, and he heard out. And then he said, if you don't mind me saying, I think you are more the alcoholic than your husband. She was shocked. And he said, it is you who are so obsessed with his alcoholism, and you have created this whole mountain of a story. So who is the alcoholic? So what he was pointing to is, what are we addicted to? Our incessant thinking reveals our addictions. We are addicted to certain views and points of view, how people should be and should not be, and how they should behave, and all that. Those are addictions, which we are not aware of. That is why I like what Rohit says. His approach is a bit radical. He just says, just try not to be a nasty person. It's hard, because we get nasty, especially on those who are soft targets.
Is it all this also related to a sense that we feel unsecured about things? All our approval, attachment, or controlling nature comes from the sense that we are not secure. So though we say that we are surrendering to the source or the divine mother or everything, I think till that feeling or that beingness happens within you, we will always face this thoughts of approval, attachments, or controls.
Yes, because if I get your approval, it means I exist. If I don't get your approval, it means I die. It's all this only. The ego wants approval. It wants to be validated. Hey, fantastic point of view. You're a great guy. Amazing. Ah, now I know who I am. I exist. This is me. It is all about that. The problem is that from childhood, we were bombarded with conditioning. Parents' conditioning, parents' economic status, geographical location, religion, which school I went to, which college I went to, on the basis of which I formed an opinion. Was any of this mine? And yet the ego is trying to perpetuate this identity. This is me. This is me. This is me. All the ego's decisions are based on factors beyond its control. You can agree on that point.
Yes.
Because none of this was in your control. So is the decision you take truly yours?
No.
Now, if you can accept that, that is the death of the ego. And accept that others too, who I meet and say things and do things, are really not the decision makers, though they appear to be. We are all pieces on the chessboard of life moved by a higher power. The man of understanding lives this understanding through the journey of life. That there's a higher force at play, moving people and making them do the things they do. So he is no longer obsessed with individuals, because he has seen the one behind the many. But our focus goes to what stands out. It's so simple. If a room has 10 alcoholics, will any alcoholic stand out?
No.
Right? But if it has 1 and 9 are not, who stands out? So our attention goes to that which stands apart and stands out. Because the ego is allured by what stands out.
So it is not only our attachment, but our aversions, which actually attracts us much more.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when someone asked my teacher, I met him when he was in his 80s, And every day he would wear his white kurta pajama for satsang. Only on his birthday and Guru Purnima, maybe, he would wear like a pale pink kurta or beige kurta, something like that. So one day someone asked him that, you know, you being a bank manager, London School of Economics, tie, blazer and all that, and you're wearing white kurta pajama every day for satsang. And he replied saying, besides it being comfortable, I wear it so that there is no projection. Which means what? People are coming for the teaching, not for me. Now, are we willing to disappear into the background? Or do we love to project, to be the hero, to be in charge of the show? The ego loves to project. This is me. Look at me. This is who I am. This is called being lost in the illusion.
Is the death of the ego permanent or it is only situational?
Death is death. Is there a situational death?
Can we say in that particular situation?
No. You are quite right in your question in the sense the ego starts dying to the small things in life bit by bit. When this new understanding dawns, you will have situations where you will feel in this instance, it's gone. In this instance, it's gone. In that sense, it is, in fact, it's a very compassionate way of dying. Because God is allowing you to die bit by bit. You're quite right. Without that jolt. But ultimately, when you see that, my God, first like 4 out of 10, then 6 out of 10, then 8 out of 10 situations, only the deeply ingrained ones are still catching me and which I'm reacting to. That is also possible. But when it finally happens, yes, it's finished. What we would call no further need to reincarnate. Now we can say reincarnate into another lifetime, or in this lifetime, there is no further need for us to reincarnate into that situation again because it's done. So it is quite true that situations tend to repeat themselves unless the lesson is learned. It takes two hands to clap.
Actually, this happens when...
The mic is... I think she was wanting to ask a question first.
Actually, in continuation with this.
Of course. Oh, sure.
Actually, usually I feel and we see this happens slow, we can say, situational sleep of ego. When you play with children or you play with animals or in nature, suppose you are playing with dog, what ego you can have? I'm a big person. Or so that time you feel that your ego is dying or you can sleep in sleep mode. Especially when you play with children, you play with animals, you love animals, or you're loving the nature. So that time, that situational, I think.
And you know why? Because you don't have to impress animals and children.
You cannot say dog that I'm trying to show that we have.
Exactly.
I'm just loving that dog. So I cannot project my ego there.
And that is why we are drawn to animals and nature and children. Yes. Because none of them have a thinking mind. We can be ourselves.
You don't have to wear masks with children, animals and nature. So in continuation with that, that's why otherwise...
Because the correct. Animals also love you unconditionally.
Yes.
Absolutely. That is it. The problem is mask wearing. The word personality comes from the Latin word persona, which means wearing a mask. And so we start and we don't wear only one mask. One mask with colleagues, one mask social circles, one mask here, one mask there. We have a whole collection of masks. And so this teaching is an invitation to put them all down. Why? Because it is saying you are not the person you thought you were, nor is the other. It is pointing back to that one consciousness which is orchestrating the whole show. If you are before me and all your memory and data is wiped out and so is mine, both of us would be blank slates. Both of us would be pure being, which is what we are. But the sage has realized that this person in front of me is a collection of circumstances and events which they had no control over, which is motivating them to say and do certain things. So the sage is not losing sight of the fact that the same consciousness is animating both the instruments. We ordinary people lose sight of that fact and create all divisions, religious divisions, other divisions. That is what happens. Yes.
It's related to all that we were speaking about. When we are this unconditioned, in this unconditioned state that a animal or a child is, and when we are in that deepest silence that you were speaking about in the beginning, that is also the stage where I feel that the person in front of me responds to me as I would in the presence of a child or in the presence of... So is that the responsibility of a spiritual aspirant to be in that state of silence as much as and the unconditioned state, and through that it spreads the peace? Because I also realize that when I'm not in that situation, then I'm drawn to a holy person or a holy place. So does it's an asking for the grace that you were speaking about. So that grace, how do we accelerate it in our life? We go to a holy person or listen to a holy...
Of course, that discourse. Certainly, that is the value of satsang. Satsang is the company of truth. Satsang. So being with such people is of tremendous benefit, and I am speaking from first-hand experience. Mine has not been a textbook journey. I have been very fortunate to have been drawn to be part of the pre-YouTube generation, you know. But it is not about unconditioning oneself. You can't uncondition yourself because it has already happened in this lifetime. But you can see conditioning for what it is. It is just revealed. You see, for example, if when you were young and your parents didn't have money and it made you a miser, you cannot undo that. That is your conditioning. You will be careful with money. You will not spend easily. What this teaching does is reveal that you did not choose to be a miser. Circumstances made you this way. So the conditioning is revealed. It cannot be undone. Now, with this revelation, your actions may change. Understanding this, you may start spending money. You may not start spending money. We don't know. But that is why the emphasis is understanding is all. So similarly, the person in front of you is seen by you as a being conditioned by circumstances which were never in their control. Earlier you thought they were in opposition to me. Now you realize there's nobody opposing anyone. They are just two points of view. So I am kind of recalibrating to Sat, which is the truth, when this is the truth.
Even if it's my own conditioning. And how does the grace flow? I mean, how does one accelerate that? Because that is a painful thing. That
it is true. It is true. It is slow. But that is why my teacher would say, never consider your a glass half empty, consider it half full. Because even this much asking would not have arisen without grace. The fact that you are sitting here is grace. Not just here, I mean any spiritual gathering, satsang. It is grace which pulls. The yearning is there, yes. But it's nicer to yearn. My Sufi mentor, he says, when people come to him with ailments, he says, very good, at least you remember God now, otherwise you don't remember God. That yearning is a remembrance for the source. I think there's some plum cake after the satsang. Everyone is gearing up for the new year. Illusion of time. I read some on some social media that someone told his friend, I'll see you at 4:23 p.m. So the friend said, you can't be so exact. Why can't you say 4:20 or 4:30? But he said 4:23 is as exact as 4:20 or 4:30. How is it not as exact? It is 4:23 and that is 4:20 and that is 4:30. Isn't it? And I used to do this with my friends. I'll see you down at 5:15, 5:16. We've split numbers up. Time is sliced. What is new? The new year, new sets of challenges, new pleasures, new pains, which has been going on since you were born. But what are we celebrating? Thinking we'll have more pleasures in the coming year than pain. Has that been anyone's life experience? But it feels good to be positive, to look forward to things. Be careful what you ask for. As they say, you might just get it. New insights, new revelations. These are the aspirations, as the mother of Pondicherry loves that word, aspiration. Aspiring to a new way of dealing with life, dealing with situations, a new way of engaging with the world, engaging with people I meet.
More like an adventure of consciousness.
Yes.
More conscious you become. It's an adventure.
It is an adventure. That is my New Year's wish for everyone.